I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to Your Money Matters with MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Today, we're talking with Mike Bell once again, who is president and CEO of the Maryland and D.C. Credit Union Association. Welcome back, Mike. Always good to have you here.
Great. Thank you.
So I'm curious, we left off talking about credit unions and the roles they play as a nonprofit as opposed to being a for-profit banking institution. We talked about wherever you work, you can find a credit union usually or some institution you're working in. How about businesses? I mean, is there a business end to credit unions as well?
Absolutely. Credit unions were formed in Maryland 80 years ago and have always been helping businesses grow. And you can get a business loan at many credit unions in the state. And actually what we found is during this credit crisis, small businesses in particular are often overlooked by for-profit commercial banks. That a business loan to them is multi-million dollars, but many of the people working on either starting a business or expanding their business are talking about multi-thousand dollar loans. And credit unions are a great place to go in and talk about getting a loan like that. And what we're actually finding is during the credit crisis, some stats here, business lending is down 14% at commercial banks over the last year, March to March. But at credit unions, it's up 38%. So we're stepping further into the marketplace to help small businesses right at the time they need an alternative.
What do you mean by small business when you talk about it? How do you define that?
That could be someone working from their home, doing a small internet run business. That could be, a couple person mom and pop shop. It can be everything up to, larger businesses. So, I think that the niche market is generally the smaller entrepreneur. But a credit union can take a look and I think fill that role from a loan that's a couple of thousand to, a couple hundred thousand dollars or even beyond.
So how can a credit union afford the risk of doing that?
Well, credit unions generally, because they're smaller, they know who they're lending to. We're lending to a small circle inside the co-op, and they're able to do really good due diligence. We've also hired all of the right expertise. To do it, the regulators insist that the folks making the loans be able to assess the applications and go through a working process. So oftentimes, the business owner has been a member or a customer of the credit union for a long period of time. So it may not even be somebody that's brand new. But if you are brand new, it's a chance to sit down and talk with a human across the table and not be worried about a loan officer that's in Sacramento, California. You're right here in Baltimore working with a loan officer.
Supposing you're a person whose bank accounts and banking have been at a different kind of bank.
Well, it's a great time to switch. come on over. The water's fine. No, it is. Look, we think every consumer and we think every business owner, look, every penny counts in this market, in this environment. So take a look because we think a credit union either on the savings account side, the deposit account side, the fee side to a business account can be far lower at a credit union. And we know that the loans tend to come with a lot less hassle, a quicker decision, and are done right here locally.
But credit unions, no matter which ones they are around the state or country, are not just going to give out small business loans willy-nilly because
no.
They come in.
No, it's a business. We're going to look at the business loans. You've got to have a good business plan on hand. All of the homework has to get done because, again, this isn't money from Wall Street. This is the savings of you and me right here in the community. So we do want to make sure it's a good risk. But I think the credit union you'll find when you sit down with them, they're going to help you develop the plan further, ask you the things that you need to come up with in order to get the loan. They're going to try to find a way to say yes.
And again, the uniqueness of all this is, as you said, again, it's a co-op so that at the end of the year, if your money is in there, whether you're a business or an individual, something comes back to you.
Absolutely. We've gotten in this country so used to the farmer's market concept about eating closer to home. Well, credit unions are finance closer to home. We're right here in your community. It's the same people you work with, you live with, you go to school with. It's all of our savings pooled together and lent out right here in the community. That's what makes a credit union so fascinating, I think.
Mike Bell, President and CEO of the Maryland and D.C. Credit Union Association. Good to see you. And next week we'll come back and talk about financing and remortgaging in this economy. Good to have you back.
Thank you. Get yourself to a credit union.
You've been listening to Your Money Matters, brought to you by MeQ. MeQ, invest in yourself, and we'll invest in you. More information, 1-800-248-MECU or www.mecu.com. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We are joined in the studio right now by the Reverend Hector Rodriguez, who is the vicar of the Episcopal Church of the Resurrection on the West Side. He's also the Latino missioner for the Episcopal Diocese of Maryland. Luis Lorin, who has been on the show many times, is an organizer for the United Workers, a human rights organization for low-wage workers in Baltimore. Also, once again joining us is Marvin Doc Cheatham. Doc Cheatham, of course, is the former president of the Baltimore branch of the NAACP and the local chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the Baltimore City Election Board, who is now still causing trouble in a good way, but without the title. And joining us in the half hour, in a half an hour from now or less, will be Dr. Earl O'Farrell Hutchinson, who is one of our brilliant thinkers in this country, who has written one of his 10 books, is The Latino Challenge to Black America, Towards a Conversation Between African Americans and Hispanics. And he'll be joining us at 6:30. And our guests will stay with us during the whole hour. They're here in studio. And gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Great to be here, Mark.
Thank you.
One of the things that seem to come out in this last couple of weeks, these tragic deaths of two men who come from Central America in our communities and one who's been severely injured. Both their assailants were African Americans. Was this question that always erupts over the divide between the Latino world and the black world, whether it's in the poorest sections because of or any other part of our society, the anger over immigration, how that affects the black community in certain ways psychologically. And, you know, I'll just throw this last question, and I'll just ask you all your thoughts about where you think we are, is that, you know, throughout history it's been the case, whether it's been the 1840s when free blacks of Baltimore were working the docks of the city and the Irish immigrants came in and the clashes took place between the Irish and free African Americans of that period, that people struggling at the very bottom sector of society for what's there, and if that's a piece of it, or something deeper. I mean, so I'm just curious about that, and also about what you both see, Luis and Father Rodriguez, about what you see inside the Latino community, why there's so much kind of fear and anxiety at the moment. And so those are the two issues I'd like to wrestle with in the first half hour. Let's start with the fear and anxiety that you both see inside the Latino community, and what do you see going on as a result of this or leading up to this?
Well, Mark, in the last 3.5 weeks, I've had one Latino shot within a few feet of the front door of our church on Linwood. That's the one where the story in the front page today was
of the young woman apprehending the
assailant. I've also lost two parishioners from that same area, both men from a small town in Honduras near the El Salvador border. So what you find in the Latino, in my parish and in the Latino community around Patterson Park, north of the park, is tremendous fear. People are terrorized. You know, when you have, and these two men were related, the ones that came from Honduras. And so you have one little town losing two men at the same time, and you've got, you know, spouses and children of these men wondering, you know, how in the world, you know, they came up here because it was like the only way out for them economically. And these men were here supporting those families. Martin Reyes, who was just killed on Saturday morning, beat to a pulp, literally. One of his daughters is here, but his wife and five other children are back home. So,
how old is his daughter?
The daughter is in her late 20s, I believe. And so there's just tremendous fear. People just are thinking about going back home, and that's all they can think of is how do we stay safe? They're staying home. They're staying home from work. They're staying home from lots of people are just terrorized right now.
Luis, how do you see it?
Well, I see a deep problem. And I'm glad that you do a reference to the historical thing, you know, because this division is more about poor people than race. And the thing is because, you know, part of our leadership development at United Workers is reading the other history of the United States, that book.
The People's History.
The People's History. In Spanish, is the others.
In Spanish, is the other. Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, sorry. But
okay.
The United States history. And that book makes reference to when this country started, how they separate slaves. Even they was slaves, they separate white from black in order to create this division on poor people. And, you know, the Bacon's Rebellion, for example, was a great example about how they try to keep everyone separate because it's not the best, it's not the best interest for them. So this is a division for poor people that they use race, they use language, they use gender, they use wherever we have to divide poor people who are already struggling. You know, the people, in the case of the immigrants, we came here because we are looking for a better economic situation. But at the same time, the people who are here, they also are experimenting a difficult situation in the economic side. So all that create tension, you know, because they, everyone are living in the same places, working at the same places, and that create tension because everyone are trying to survive. And I really want to go back a little bit with what the Dr. King said a couple of years ago. And he literally said, the disposed of this nation, the poor, both white and Negro, and I want to add here Latino, because also Latino are poor and disposed and this at this time.
Disposable, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Dr. King said, live in a cruel injustice society. They must organize against the injustice, not against the lives of the person who are their fellow citizens, but against the structures through which the society is refusing to take means which have been calling for and which are at hand to lift the load of poverty. There are millions of poor people in this country who have very little or even nothing to lose. If they can be helped to take action together, they will be doing so with a freedom and a power that will be a new unsettling force in our complacent nation life. And that is exactly what we need, that unity. Because for a long, long time, we see how these stereotypes and this division is reinforced by political and economic structures. And sometimes also by the media, you know, media who looking for the worst things, you know, because we know Baltimore is a city who have a lot of crime. We know that it's a lot of crime in Baltimore City. But then when we reinforce that idea, it's really dangerous. But because we see this division that is creating tension in people. Even in the workplace, for my experience working at the Inner Harbor in the campaign that we have right now, people are already divided by language and by race. And they don't know anything about the others. So when we call to a meeting, when we call to a retreat, when we do this kind of unity actions, mm-hmm. they understand what is going on in the other side. And they think in other way. And they feel like identified with each other, you know. Because part of this is what I don't know about the other community. What I don't know what is the struggles that they are doing, you know. And this is also, all this is about the poverty. All this is about, you can see this happened just in these poor neighborhoods. This doesn't happen in like other places because this tension is created also by poverty. And that is what we see.
And I wonder, Doc, how you look at this. This is, I mean, as a man who's represented so many interests in the African-American community at large, but especially the African-American community in our city, your take on what you've just heard and what you think.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me, and it's an honor to be here with both Luis and Father Rodriguez. It's good to have an Episcopalian such as myself on my side here. Is there reason to be concerned? My answer is yes. You know, I'm not new to working with Casa de Maryland. You know, since I've been branch president, we've had a good working and communication relationship, and seeing and hearing what we've been seeing for the last year and a half, I would have to admit I think there is reason for concern. But I think Luis was really putting it in great perspective, because when we look at communities, and I'll just take our specific community here in Baltimore. He mentioned the things such as unemployment. I look at culture, the not only the fact that we may not understand each other's culture, but there's not the type of respect and intelligence about each other's culture that we really understand why we say and do things that we do. I really think some of the things that we did with the blues group, Blacks and Jews, I think we need to almost emulate between the Latino community and African-American community. Mm-hmm. I'm calling for that we immediately meet, that we bring some of the leaders from both ethnic groups and begin to have some serious dialogue about at least breaking down the barriers of communication. We need to talk more. We need to work more. But when I look at, you know, this community, and I've lived here all my life. I'm 60 years of age. And, you know, I've lived in communities where I lived in the Easterwood neighborhood, and we would do battle with Sandtown. Had nothing to do with, you know, us really being angry. It's because we were next to each other. Upper Park Heights, Lower Park Heights, Pigtown, Cherry Hill. You know, these were areas that basically battled, but they battled because they were so close, but they had some of the same challenges, you know, that the education was inadequate, that they were unemployed, that they were fighting for the same jobs, and that kind of pits you against one another. I think the last two major incidents, and we really, I shouldn't say we, I better say me, I keep forgetting, I don't wear any hats anymore, I just wear straw hats. But I really feel that the last two major incidents weren't as much race-related as it was real mental health. And we've not really discussed that. When I was president of the NAACP, we had a major two-hour discussion on Black mental health. And we're seeing in areas, and it's all ethnicities living in the type of communities that we're living in. They're not eating properly. They're not getting enough rest. They're in communities that have drug abuse as a high problem, HIV and AIDS, that there is a serious mental health problem in our communities in general that we are not addressing. But as I said, I'm really calling for Mark and to our great Latino brothers here that we immediately need to come down together. We need to sit down, bring some of the leaders together, and begin understanding and appreciating each other's culture and begin letting our communities know that we are in this together. You know, we need the same jobs. We need the same type of education. I think we're failing in education. But I think it's a time, without a doubt, not for us to turn on one another. I think it's time for us to turn towards one another and try to help one another. And I was very displeased with both the comments from Councilman Kraft. I think he almost inflamed the situation this past Monday. I think the comments, he began to actually relate that it was an African-American that did this to a Latino. Well, the gentleman, I'm using that to be kind, the individual that did what he did and said that he hated Mexicans, it is clear this guy has a serious mental health problem, a health problem that seemingly there may be some history that the family tried unsuccessfully to give him the kind of help that he needs. And it's clear that he had a problem or some misgivings about another particular race that may have fueled the situation. But I think the overlying problem was that you had folks in the same community, and here you had a guy with mental health. And sometimes because we don't understand one another, we seemingly victimize that individual because maybe they don't look like we do, or maybe they don't speak the way that we do. But as I said, I've named some communities, you know, that we've done that, you know, with each other. We need to do this tomorrow, not next week. We must bring the communities together immediately. And I'm really glad to see that the faith community and the Latino community was there. I'm very displeased that I did not see a large turnout from the African-American faith community. And it could well be that maybe they did not receive the announcement, because I didn't get the announcement until the day before. And I counseled during voter registration at Mondawmin to be with my Latino brothers and sisters. But we have work to do, but we must come together as opposed to pitting ourselves against each other.
On that point, Mark, I just want to add that this Sunday we're hosting at the Church of the Resurrection an ecumenical service at 7:30 p.m. And hopefully the word is going out that this is an interfaith service. Well, we're looking to all the faith community leaders to join us as we join hands together, as we pray for our beloved lost family members, and also grieve for our whole community, because this affects everybody. As I walk the streets, and I've been walking them every day since in these incidents, and everyone is affected. Everyone's affected, and that's why yesterday evening, when Southeast Commander Davis walked with the Patterson Park folks, and they had the largest contingent probably in some time, you see people concerned of whatever race, culture, or color, concerned about the tremendous increase in violence. So we hope that this Sunday evening at 7:30 at Church of the Resurrection, 2900 East Fayette, we do have a good turnout. And from there, from the church, after a brief service, we will walk, have a candlelight vigil down to Patterson Park. I know that my bishop, the diocesan bishop, Bishop Eugene Taylor Sutton, who is the chair of the Ecumenical Leaders Group, is putting this on top of the agenda for their next meeting on September 8th. So I'm quite sure that, again, the faith community will come together and they will take action to bring folks together around this at this particular time. And I'm also, the Church of the Resurrection is a member of Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development.
Build.
And some of our Build pastors and leaders will be there at Church of the Resurrection this Sunday evening. And that'll be the topic for our next clergy caucus and for our next strategy team meeting. Not just the immediate, reaction, but long-term.
That's right.
Long-term, because Build has been working on this for their 40-year history. They've been working in the city, working with the kids, working with the schools, you know, bringing about living wage and all the rest. And we have to bring the focus of this. And the Interfaith, Baltimore Interfaith Coalition, not that many months ago, perhaps you were there at the,
I was definitely there
at the cathedral, where
that's right.
Where, you know, that was coming together like perhaps we haven't seen in a while. So what we need to do is translate the energy, translate the anger, translate the angst, and then turn the terror and the fear into some positive energy to bring about change. The first thing we have to do is to make our people safe. I mean, that's the first thing we have to do. I understand from the police that there's been a an effort to clean the southeast or the eastern area north of Monument, and so they're telling me, well, you know, unfortunately, they go to the next neighborhood, and so you have them in your front door and your back door. We have to make sure that folks are safe. That's number one.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. And I'd like to get your thoughts as we talk here. You just heard Father Hector Rodriguez, who is Latino missioner for the Episcopal Diocese of Maryland and vicar of the Church of the Resurrection. And before that, Doc Cheatham, former president of the Baltimore branch NAACP. Luis Laren, who is organizer for the United Workers, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts in your community, if it's a Latino community, of the fear inside the community, of the questions of trusting the police, of the questions of what you face day to day, of your thoughts in all communities about this divide between blacks and Latinos, and also the fuel to this fire, which is driven by kind of a nativist xenophobic hatred of immigrants, but especially Latino immigrants in this case, in this country. And your thoughts on all that. Let me get to your calls at 410-319-8888. Diane, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Diane, you're on the air.
I'm sorry, I had turned up the radio a little bit.
That's okay, go ahead.
Is Doc still there?
Yes, I am. How you doing, Diane?
I'm fine. How
God
you doing?
God bless you, my sister.
I forgot the vicar's name and the other person. But anyway, I want to say, and Doc knows me very well, it's a lot of media hate, and so when it doubles over and it goes into our community, so, and, you know, I think somebody already talked about it, about the miscommunication, so it makes, and we all scrambling for the same jobs and stuff like that. I think that it, this service will be good, and I need to get the address and everything because I will be there on Sunday.
I'll email it to you, and I'll Facebook it tonight.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
To further the communication, you know, we need a summit, you know, right there in Southeast. I am in Southeast Baltimore, and we need that, and I think it should have happened before the immigrants even got here. You know, it's like a explosion, and, you know, you're fighting for less jobs, and everybody, you know, get rumors instead of them knowing that they are rumors. They rather believe a rumor alive than the truth. And then when it becomes true, they still don't believe it. That's what I see. And like Doc said about the Jewish and the blacks, it's a way that we can forge a relationship with the Hispanic. I have Hispanics around here cleaning where I live at. And, you know, we talk all the time. It's a husband and wife team. We talk all the time. Me and my neighbors, we talk to them. We just reached out, and we just started communicating. You know, it's a little barrier, but they understand us, and we understand them.
And thank you. And we'll put this on our website and announce it again later, that it'll take place, is it 1 p.m.? It says 1, it means 7 p.m.
7:30 p.m.
At 2900 East Fayette in the Church of the Resurrection. That's 2900 East Fayette Street. Number here is 410-319-8888. Let's see, Halim, you're on the air.
Yes. How y'all doing?
Well, welcome.
Good. I think communication is important because it's important that we have this understanding between the two communities. But more importantly, I think that working together will solve the problem. And it will alleviate some of the things that we see with our own eyes. And I'm case in point, when I drive through Baltimore City and I'm looking at the workforce, those who are actually working through, on the roads and doing the construction and et cetera, they're mostly Latino workers. And I'm quite sure that other African-Americans are seeing this very thing, and they're saying, well, how come they're working and we're not working? You know, we're the majority in the city, so why are we getting some of this work? I think that if there's a concerted effort to bring African-Americans on the workforce and have us work alongside with our Latino brothers, and we can begin to learn each other from that paradigm, I think that will go further than us just trying to talk our way out of this.
Halim, you raised an issue I'm glad you raised, because I want to, I think that's one of the crux issues at the bottom on the street level that people see and feel and think about all the time, which is the question whether it's true or whether this is kind of vast stereotype and rumor in our community that if you're Latino, you get a job that doesn't pay much money, but you have the job. If you're black, you're not hired because nobody wants to hire you. That is. So we have to take a short break. When we come back from this break, I want to let you all leap into this. We'll also be joined at that time in the next few minutes by Dr. Earl Ofari Hutchinson, who can leap into that part of the conversation as well. So stay with us. Don't go away. We'll come back to this and let's get back to this conversation as we come back from this break. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Women's Health for every stage of a woman's life, offering compassionate care and comprehensive obstetric and gynecological services from routine exams to specialized pelvic surgery. More information at 1-800-492-5538 or www.umm.edu/women's center. We are going to tackle that last question because I think that's the crux of the matter, at least on the street level, that we need to address. We are joined here in studio by the Reverend Hector Rodriguez, co-vicar of the Episcopal Church of the Resurrection and Latino missioner for the Episcopal Diocese of Maryland, Luis Larin, who is organizer for the United Workers, a human rights organization for low-wage workers here in Baltimore with connections around the country. Marvin Doc Cheatham. Doc Cheatham, of course, the former president of the Baltimore branch, the NAACP, local chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and the City Election Board. He is now an independent agitator. I say that with all love and respect. And we are now joined by Dr. Earl Ofari Hutchinson, a noted political analyst, author of 10 books, including The Latino Challenge to Black America, Towards a Conversation Between African Americans and Hispanics. He's the associate editor at the New American Media and a regular contributor to blacknews.com, alternet.com, blackamericaweb.com, and the Huffington Post. And it's a pleasure, Earl Ofari Hutchinson, to have you on the show with us.
All right. My pleasure, too.
So we are tackling the question here. I'm going to ask all four of you. You didn't hear the question, I think, before we went to break. But we had a listener, a Halim, who just called in, to say that part of the reason for the divide in this between black and Latino communities is because when black men looking for work drive through the city, what they see is Latino workers working or Latino workers waiting on the corner for jobs and black men going without jobs. Now, the reality and the myth of that is at the crux of the feeling on the street. So that's I'm glad that was raised because that's where I wanted to go. So I've asked our guests in the studio to kind of answer this thing kind of directed and pointedly. So Earl Ofari Hutchinson can jump in with his thoughts on this as well. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. I think you said as we were going to break, Doc, that's what people see. That's what you hear more than anything else on the street.
Without a doubt. And Dr. Hutchinson, it's an honor to be on a radio show with you, my brother.
Well, thank you very much. My pleasure, too.
Halim hit the nail right on the head so far as to what I hear as the major conversation in the African-American community as it relates to concerns about Hispanic, Latino, and African-Americans, the issue of employment, the issue of the fact that within our communities, and you don't have to drive, it's within walking distance of wherever you live, that you see early in the morning that you see Hispanics and Latinos working, and you don't see a lot of African-American males working. But we have to look at that in a lot of different directions. We have to look at the employers that are doing the hiring and the fact that it's very, very clear that they are very specifically offering the lowest wages possible in many cases. And unfortunately, in some cases, our African-American males are turning down those types of wages. And you kind of have to question and be concerned. You know, you're turning down something when, in fact, you have nothing there at all. And, you know, the fact that we see it, you know, you can walk downtown. You don't have to walk about anywhere. You can see who's doing the gardening. You can see who's doing the street paving. This is an everyday occurrence. So that does somewhat pit the communities against one another. So we not only have to address that issue, but we also have to look very carefully at the employers that are coming in and actually doing this type of hiring and whether or not they're actually paying a living wage, because we don't particularly talk about a minimum wage. We kind of prefer a living wage here in the city of Baltimore.
So, Luis, before we go to Dr. Hutchinson and then to the father, let me ask you to come in as a man who works on the streets and organizing low-wage workers. Your thoughts on that, then we'll go to Earl Ofari Hutchinson.
Yeah, well, it's that is the perception. That's true. Everyone have that stereotype, you know. But then we need to look more in depth because when we really, in my experience, like day labor, like a worker in different manufacturers and then like organizer, it's like how the system, the political structures and the economic structures use this kind of division. The way that, sure, they offer this low wage for this job and a Latino guy came and take that job. But then also we saw like the poverty wages that they receive, and we also saw like a lot of thief of the wages. So many times with
theft of the wages by the bosses,
by
the workers.
Bosses, yes. Right. And so at the end, and that is the other side that no one talk about, you know. And also this boss came to an African-American worker and said, like, you know what? These Latino guys, they are taking your jobs. And they, the same boss came to the Latino person and said, like, the black people are lazy. So you are a good worker. I love how you work. And that is what they, what is what both sides listen. And I tell that by my experience, because that is what I see in my experience like a worker. And that also, obviously, that create attention, that create a little bit of, well, I am a human being also. So why I don't have a job if I am a human being? But this, all that is kind, all that is just speaking about the exploitation and the manipulation from the system to the workers, to the poor people. Again, I mean, again, it's the same issue about poor people, like poor people trying to get a job, poor people trying to bring food to the table, poor people trying to get a house or pay the rent, and they are fighting for these low wages jobs, these poverty wages jobs, you know. So that is the thing that we need to see also, like how the bosses use that division and use that language barrier sometimes to don't talk with each other. Because just today, I did a home visit with a worker, and I was talking with him about the situation at his restaurant. And he said, well, my situation is really bad. And also, I saw other African-American guys who are, they have a lot of issues, but I can't tell them because I don't speak English really well. But I'm really glad if you can come and talk with them because they have a lot of issues also. So he was aware that it's not just him. It's also the other co-workers that are from other race.
That's an important point. Before we go to further, let me turn to Earl O'Farrell Hutchinson, who joins us here by phone. And your thoughts on what you've heard and on this particular question.
Well, it's something that we've had a lot of experience with in L.A. For many, many years. As a matter of fact, for decades. It's all the arguments I'm hearing and all the way it's being framed, the issues. These are things that we've wrestled with here. As a matter of fact, going back 25 years in L.A., and two things always jump out. It is true. Stereotypes and perceptions, as you know, they are very emotional, and they're also irrational. But there's always a tinge of logic, and there's a tinge of fact to every stereotype and the perceptions that drive it. So when you're looking at the question, do many Latinos take at a certain level, and we're only talking about a certain level of jobs, and we're talking about generally lower end, lower skilled, or marginally skilled, and generally with either minimal or very little education, areas that are very competitive, as you know, with African Americans at that level. So what happens is when you do look around the landscape, you look at the construction sites, when you look at the retail services, when you look at the restaurants, when you look at the fast food joints, but especially the manual labor, and when you see, when I say you, many young African Americans that are either unskilled or marginally skilled and unemployed, and when they see Hispanic workers there, right away the assumption is, ah, these are jobs I should have, I would have, if they weren't there. And so as a result of that, it builds on itself. And then on the other hand, and I heard one of the gentlemen say about how some Hispanics are told by some bosses or employers, these guys are lazy, they have criminal records, don't want to work, they'll steal from you, steal you blind. In other words, planting once again racial perceptions and stereotypes there. So right away you got a combustible mix. And so essentially the divisions are planted. The reality is, as we well know, there's not enough jobs for all. The reality is that one group is always, and that's the history of this country, pitted against another group, always at the low end. And another reality is that when you look at private employers, discrimination, and I've said this many, many times, and I made the point in my book, if there was not one undocumented worker in this country, not one, African Americans, in many cases, would still have double-digit unemployment, because at the end of the day, you still got employers that won't hire you for a myriad of reasons. So, but again, I cannot discount the stereotypes and perceptions that drive it. One other thing, it's gotten so bad that in L.A., believe it or not, going back 10 years, you've had organized groups. There have been a number of rallies. There have been a number of demonstrations. There have been a number of protests and violence, too, by African Americans that have actually organized in organized groups. And essentially, their only issue is this: stop illegal immigration. Arizona, you had a black contingent that actually went to Phoenix and participated in some of the anti-immigration rallies there, in support of course, Arizona's immigration law. So I'm just simply saying this: it is a widespread problem. I see it's moving to the east now, and it's something that, unfortunately, our leadership at all levels are going to have to deal with.
And I really want to, we only have like 15 or 20 minutes left, so I want to focus this in. I think what you're saying, what you all have just said right now, is a very critical issue about where the future goes, because you see America being a very divided place, politically very divided. You see the rise of, for want of a better term, a kind of a xenophobic right-wing movement in America. That picture is mostly white, at least visibly. But this issue of immigration is one that drives a wedge, and it's a very dangerous wedge. And I think, as you were saying, Earl, it's coming east. Things always start in California and move east. Good and bad.
Good, bad, and ugly.
Okay. That's our fatal flaw.
And so, but the question is then, what is the response? How is that counteracted? Because it clearly is going to be something that's going to be, the media, the national media, Fox News and the rest, will begin to play up this black-Latino divide. And it's going to, mark my words, if this continues, it'll be played up as the biggest thing since apple pie. And that's going to be, and then that begins to change public perception. And there has to be a response to that. So I'm curious, gentlemen, what is the response and what do we do next?
Mark, on the issue of workers, we're about to celebrate Labor Day. And the Episcopal Bishops of Maryland are about to announce a week from today at 1 o'clock at the Cathedral of the Incarnation their first pastoral letter, and it's going to be entitled Welcoming the Stranger. And it talks about what you described as seeming to be the reaction of so many people towards immigrants. And it talks about our Judeo-Christian tradition of receiving immigrants. But one of the things it talks about is that we ought not pit worker against worker. What we need to do is raise the floor. Instead of, getting the, in Spanish we say las migajas, the leftovers. Workers need to unite together. And labor's had a rough time for, decades in this country. And recently it seemed to make some progress, but there's still a long way to go. So workers' rights need to be respected. And there's been a lot of coming together, certainly in the union movement, with regard to receiving immigrants, for example. That needs to extend beyond workers and into the rest of society. The other thing that has to happen is comprehensive immigration reform. So I think, what Arizona did and the House of Bishops and the Episcopal Church, everybody's boycotting Arizona, and I understand that. But the House of Bishops took a different tack. They said, we're going to go to Arizona, and we're going to go witness at the border. We're going to stand in solidarity with immigrants, and we're going to be there in opposition to 1070.
When is that going to happen?
That's going to happen on Mexican Independence Day. It's going to happen on September, right before the 15th of September.
So we'll have to do a show with those folks from Arizona when that happens. I'm going to go around the room here, and I want to answer that question. I'm going to get back to a couple of callers because lots of people are calling in now. We only have like 12 or so minutes left. But let me get you a thought on what I just said, then we'll go to Luis and then over to Doc.
Well, actually, two things. Now, I certainly agree. I think labor has a big role to play because we're talking about not just the leadership but the rank and file. And also, even though labor's had a rough time in recent years, still the numbers are there. I mean, the last election showed that. So I think that's important. I think it is important, too, for religious leaders to speak out, too. And many of them are doing it to their credit. In Los Angeles, we have an organization that I've been a part of for quite a while. It's called the LA Urban Policy Roundtable. We've had a number of forums. We've had a number of community get-togethers where we brought Latino leadership from different organizations, primarily civil rights, and some elected officials, and also African-American leaders, again, primarily civil rights leaders in the city, and also some elected officials. We brought them to the table. There's been dialogue sessions. I can't tell you how many we've had over the last 5 or 6 years of these. And if you ask the question, has it solved all the problems? No. Is there still conflict? Yes. Are the tensions still there? Of course. However, we always take this view. Suppose we didn't do anything. Suppose we weren't there. How much worse could it have been? So we like to think that the work that this organization and many others have done certainly has made a difference. And one other thing, too, it's not just, although the conversation has focused primarily on the workplace, mm-hmm. there have been other areas, too, especially in and around L.A., where we've had even more serious problems. I'm talking about gangs, violence in the communities, and the jails and prisons. I mean, we've had warfare there. Also, schools, education, too. Huge battle over resources there. So what's happened is, at all levels, the leadership has to step up, organizations have to be proactive, they have to message correctly, and most importantly, they've got to bring people to the table that are serious about dialogue. And I think when that happens, you do begin to see some changes. Monumental, not necessarily. Incremental, yes, but it's better than nothing.
Luis.
Well, the way that we deal with this issue is follow the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Organizing Model, and that is bring everyone together. Everyone, because everyone is affected by the same issue. Like, we talk about this, like, jobs, economic situation, and part of the way that we do this is, for example, right now we start the radio project, a little bit inspired in what you did with before with your shows, you know, like expose what's going on. And we started this project. And one of these days, we was a Latino guy was talking about how bad he was treated at the restaurant where he works. And one African-American brother, he started to cry when he listened all the suffer that this worker passed in that workplace. So it's that kind of relationship. And also is bring to the way that we do this is we bring together under the human rights. Because when you talk about human rights, you forget the race, you forget the gender, the language, you forget everything. And you just talk about you're a human being, you have rights, you have suffered, and you are passing the same issues. And that is the solution that we found to deal with this in order to organize everyone, saying like human rights for everyone everywhere. And that is what we are always working on, because it's the way that we found like it's really, really effective to bring people together, to understand the cultures, understand each other, and feel like I'm part of this. I'm part of this this world. I'm part of this humanity, and I need to do something because these economic and political structures are trying to divide us like they did this for the whole history in this country. Even when they start, like I said in the beginning, the slaves, they even separate the slaves, the white from the black. So this is something that they always do, and the way that we found the solution for this is the human rights for everyone, everywhere.
And we only have a few minutes left, and Doc, I want to bring you in here.
Round table, that's all I keep asking for. Dr. Hudson said it exactly what I'm saying. It's time for labor, civil rights, and faith to call the round table together. We need to do it now.
And I think that one of the things that we can talk to maybe in another discussion is that I think that the fear of Latino community in the black world is very real, and vice versa. And that's something I think that some of the mistakes that the blues made in the old days, and I was there at the early parts of that, was the conversation was in the upper stratosphere among like-minded people, and it needs to be down.
You said I may have to tell you, the bougie folks got together, and those of us down on the bottom weren't included. That's what happened.
That's what I was trying to say, but I just put it in a
nice way. See, I don't have to wear that hat anymore, Mark. I call it straight. Our bougie folks got together and left the rest of us down at the bottom. So the bottom needs to come to the top now. We need to come to a round table.
What'd you say, Earl?
I said the bottom has to rise to the top.
That's right.
That's right. So I was trying to be nice.
I just add one other thing about.
Go ahead. We have about 2 minutes.
At a high school here in L.A., there were big fights, a lot of violence between black and Latino students. Interesting thing happened. Teachers were immobilized. Administration couldn't. They were clueless. Board of Education didn't know anything. What the parents did, sometimes when you leave people to their own devices, they get it right. you had a number of parent groups, black and Latino, that came together. They had the meetings. They talked it out. They had the rallies. And you know what happened? They stopped the violence. That wasn't the administrators. Wasn't the mayor. Wasn't the city council. Wasn't the police. It was just people dealing at a people-to-people level. They stopped it. They recognized one thing. Look, this is our kids' education. All of them are getting rotten education in this school. We need to band together instead of fighting each other. We need to go after the school board and the administration here. More books, better teachers, resources, yada-da-da-da-da. And essentially, it worked.
And Earl O'Farrell Hutchinson, thank you so much for joining us. Hope you'll come back again soon.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to have you with us. Doc Cheatham, Luis Laren, the Reverend Hector Rodriguez, thank you all so much for being in studio with us, and we'll continue this discussion on air. Remind you, this Sunday, 7:30 p.m. at the Church of the Resurrection, 2900 East Fayette Street is the Interfaith Service, 7:30 p.m. Please join us there. I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. And reminding you, American attention area jazz vocalists and musicians, you're invited to a historic photo shoot, A Great Day in Baltimore, Monday, September 13th, 9 a.m. at the War Memorial Plaza. The photo shoot will bring together local and regional musicians in Baltimore's richest musical past, history of past, and present to support jazz in our city. Proceeds from the photograph benefit the UB Blake Cultural Center's jazz workshops. You can contact 443-204-1730. That's 443-204-1730. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Christina Arison and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Stephanie Mavronis, Daniel Gillespie, Richard Good, and Felicia Faison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, finding information about our guests and their work, and hear new additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 89.FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.